It's Friday, December 13th, 2013, and welcome to episode 160 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Ritz.
I'm Mike Joya.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology, and we have the holiday episode this month.
That's right. This is our big send-off for 2013.
So first up, of course, we'll have our security spotlight.
Surprise.
Yeah, surprise.
It's not much of a spotlight anymore. It's just constant.
It's a continuation of the last month's episode. So, Mike, what are we going to talk a little bit about this time?
We talk about major, I wouldn't say hacking, but a lot of users' credentials getting mined from Gmail and Facebook and LinkedIn.
Yeah, some account compromises again.
Yes.
So, and then we'll, instead of doing our technology picks, we'll kind of have a combination. We'll talk about some holiday gifts and some possible stocking stuffers out there. So, sit back, relax, and here we go. Up first today, we have our security spotlight, and Mike Joya is back with us. And one of the items that caught my interest this month was Twitter and Facebook being in the news again.
Yes, they and Gmail and Yahoo and LinkedIn have all supposedly had users' passwords been stolen, but through a different kind of means than we're used to, as opposed to hacking into their systems, the company's systems, through phishing or other methods. They actually used a keylogger virus software on the user's computers. And if you're not sure what keylogger is that it's a program that actually tracks what a person types on their keyboard and then stores it. In this case, probably sends a message or something.
Yeah, literally keystroke per keystroke.
Right. So then you would have the password and probably the username of the account, and then you can just log in and do whatever you want because you can impersonate them. So it was pretty big. You know, 2 million users, pretty big attack. 92 countries were affected, so it's pretty large.
Now, in something like that, I mean, it really doesn't matter what kind of computer you're running, does it? Whether it be a Mac, a Linux, or PC?
PC, mobile, Android, iMac, depending on where they installed the device. Now, it may have been easier to install this virus or this script on Windows-based computers than maybe Mac-based computers, but it depends. It could be the other way around.
And whenever I think of keyloggers, the thing, like coffee houses,
Right, and keyloggers, you were real big for, back in the day for ATM fraud, too. They would get it, they would install it on an ATM, and you slide your card in and put your PIN in, and it would give you an error. Yeah. And then you do it again, and actually the first time was actually them logging your PIN and having your PIN, and then they have your code off your magnetic strip, and then they go use it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. So how do you protect yourself from something like that?
From the ATM one, their software is a lot better on ATMs than it used to be. But with the new ones, you just got to make sure that your computer's up to date. And make sure you're using antivirus software, Microsoft Windows Defender. Malwarebytes is another free malware scanner for your computer that you can download and scan. It usually picks up a lot more of the viruses, malware than some of the other bigger name companies like Symantec. And McAfee and them. And then also there's actually a new website out. It's called Have I Been Pwned? With the old scripting of PW.
You've been owned. Yeah.
Yeah. It says with a P.
Right.
And you can actually put in your account, username. If it's an email, you can put in your email, your email address, and it will search a database of all these recent compromise and attacks and see if your account has been tagged in that type of breach, and then you need to go change your password
immediately.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Which again is a kind of good thing, and there's some things I do. We're at the end of the semester here, so there's kind of some things I kind of routinely do at the end of the semester, make some backups and change passwords and do some of those maintenance things that sometimes slip away from you. But I've got a couple of accounts that I probably need to change some passwords on because it's about time to do that.
And the other thing we actually saw here on campus was happening was someone was actually getting people, being able to change people's passwords by knowing their security questions. Our password manager allows you to set up, you know, your password, and then also security questions for you in case you forget your password. You can get in and change your password again through the security questions. Well, we found out that people were answering their security questions very easily. My dog's name, well, I can just do a Facebook search of you and figure you out, what your dog's name is. That's really easy. Some people were using the questions were the answers, and they didn't realize that that person could go in and actually get their password.
Right, and that was happening, I think, about a year and a half ago. Apple's I Forgot My Password, they had something similar where it was very easy, and I think they wanted like your birth date or something. It's something tied to Amazon, if I remember right, but those security questions are only as good as their secrets to you.
Yes.
You don't want to make them kind of public knowledge out there.
Right. And it's hard because, again, we've trained people in the security realm to make passwords something that's difficult to guess but easy for you to remember. And it usually comes way around it's difficult to guess, or it turns out it's difficult to remember, but it's pretty easy to guess, or for a computer, easy to figure out.
Right.
Knowing how the common substitution for different letters and stuff go, the computer can go through that logic real fast. It's pretty hard. I'm more of a fan of I'll have some type of tool that maybe auto-generates passwords for me, like Password Keeper that I had on my phone. There's some other free ones that you make a super long and hard password that you know, again, that is a little easier for you to remember, because it's super long, and then in there have it generate random passwords for you, and then copy and paste those into the other programs, and then anytime you need to remember that password, it's this random generated, bunch of letters and characters. I did that for my security questions too here on campus, so that you can't even guess it, because there's actually no question to guess.
Wow.
It's just blank.
Yeah. It's, I don't go through near that much effort on my passwords, as you know, but I use ones that are obscure, and not the obvious things. And that one of the things that gets me, I swear one of mine I have to reset constantly because I can never remember if it has to be capitalized or not. Mm-hmm. And that, or what's capitalized.
It's
and
secure.
I'll get locked out every time because I either won't capitalize. I'll have all the characters correct, but I don't have the right ones capitalized. It's like, son of a gun, I have to reset it again.
Yeah, here's another little trick. I try to kind of notice, like in my Gmail account, because I'm logging on multiple computers, all the time. But if you log in and scroll down at the very bottom, it says like last account activity 5 hours ago. That was like the last time that I logged into this computer. So like, it's a weekend or something and I've never logged into Gmail. And I come in Monday, check my Gmail or something, and notice that somebody was in there, 6 hours ago, and I know for sure that it wasn't me. That's a red flag that something's going on.
And if you click on the details, it actually tells you what IP addresses are connecting to that account from where they're coming. So, like, if you notice something's random and obscure, be careful, because if you have it synced up to a smart device, like a tablet or your smartphone, like mine. My number is for East Coast because that's where I got my cell phone when I got it before I came out here. So mine goes into like New York City.
Yeah.
My IP shows up through Gmail when I'm using my phone when I'm logged in that way, as opposed to Illinois here.
Yeah.
Here or on campus.
Yeah. So, just kind of those things that we've been talking about over the months and things, and to periodically change those passwords. So, like I said, I'm due for a couple of accounts that I really need to change.
And right now is a big time because that you kind of get the scammers and hackers and overdrive with all the holiday online shopping.
Right.
And on top of that, with your password, is also knowing when you're in a secure website. There's the little lock at the top of the screen now mainly, and then there's advanced encryption. It'll be green. So, when you're going, if you're buying something like through Amazon or some other online, make sure that you have a little lock at the top saying that website is secure and encrypted. You don't want to be inputting your credit card number over, free, clear, open
web
space.
Or you'll see that HTTPS if you can see the URL out there as well. So, okay. Anything else?
Well, there's also a Microsoft, actually Microsoft research unit has come up with a web page, and we'll have to get it for the show notes because I don't remember the website of it. But it actually will try to guess the next character of your password when you start to type it in, and then it'll tell you how strong your password is or isn't through like check marks at the top. Like if you get an X, it guessed the next letter that you were going to use. If you get a check mark, it means its algorithm didn't check. Didn't guess the correct letter for the next sequence in that password. So it'll tell you how strong.
I didn't try that. I bet that's probably pretty scary because, you know, just the dictionary, you start spelling words with the different combinations.
And it'll start, you know, it'll flash the different, like, the top five guesses that it would be. Like, it'll guess the whole letter or something, the whole word and everything. And you're just like, oh, my password's terrible. Anyone could guess this, you know. But don't be like other people and then, you know, send the link out to say, hey, this is cool. They just went in and put in all their passwords and like, without even checking if it was okay or not.
I mean, well, okay. Well, you know, full disclosure here. That was me.
Tell the backstory here.
And
I did.
I did. I went right to it and tried it. But I trusted the source who was sitting to my left.
And I didn't.
And went in. But as soon as I finished putting them in and was emailing you, it popped in my head. And it was like, that was so dumb to go do that.
Not all of them.
And I'd like to think that if I would have seen that on Twitter or Facebook, that I probably wouldn't have done it. No. But because it was from you.
You didn't even try like random like different things like, oh, can I guess this word? Yeah. You just went right with your password.
Oh, I did. Yeah. I just bulldozed right in there with everything I had.
Yeah.
And that. But, and like I said, as soon as I, you know, was sending you that email, it was like the little light bulb moment. And it was like, whoa, that time was probably not smart.
Time to change my passwords again.
Yeah. So then I looked at it again to see who made the site and who created it, who was responsible.
Yeah. I am just so leery of those because, you know, we just have these conversations over and over. Yeah. And no matter how good you're going to get bit at some point. It's just so prevalent. So, you know, just be careful. And, you know, we're talking about the short URLs. It's like you never really know where those links are going to take you. So, and it is trusting the source. So Mike looked like a trustworthy guy there.
You know, that was my first mistake. But it was really interesting, and it did start popping up with words. And actually, I was pleased. Mine were better than I thought they were.
That's good.
And that because of just the order that I put things. Yeah. And that. And so, and, you know, it's worth a little extra effort to do those things.
All right, we're back, and we're going to be talking about our technology picks of the week, but since it's the holiday season, I thought we might change this up a little bit and kind of talk about some different holiday gift ideas or stocking stuffers this time of year for some of the more techie members of your family. So there's all kinds of different things available for gifts, from the traditional to, you know, some more of the high tech. So, Cindy, we'll just toss it over here to you.
Okay, well, you guys are going to go more technology mode as far as the equipment, but I'm just going to pull from personal experience because this is something I just finished up. But how we can personalize now gifts and things like that by ordering online and all that. So I just, you know, for I don't know how many years now have done our Christmas cards online where, you know, you upload all your pictures. Once again, I'm going to assume they're in a safe place and they're not being sold around the world and that. But how easy it is for us now to customize and personalize things and that, whether it's, you know, Christmas ornaments, books, stationery, whatever. Went through the whole thing, put on the pictures, finished my Christmas card. Next, click the next button, had envelopes pre-addressed with my address in the return address area, you know, and just all of those convenient things that we just kind of take for granted now that were new a few years ago, and now it's just what we expect to do and all of that. And I guess, you know, it's the cool thing is, like I said, the customization that you can do, because a lot of, especially kids, have unique names and unique spellings now. And so the days when we were kids where you could find a pencil with your name on it, not so much anymore. And so I, you know, it just seems like they're adding more and more to these sites that you can order. And I I would assume they're doing really well and coming up with some, yeah, and they some have neat gifts.
And they have a lot of really nice children's stories where you actually, you know, whether you write your own children's story or if they kind of have a generic template and they just plug, you know, your child's name in there, and then being able, and it's important, you know, in this high-tech world where we're doing everything digitally, and we'll talk here a moment about a couple of my picks, to have that hands-on component of things, I think, is, again, especially for children.
Well, and sometimes, you know, we tend to think, oh, the technology makes it impersonal, but yet there are things, you know, I was looking at, you can make calendars where you actually, if it's somebody's birthday, you can put their picture, their photo in that day on the calendar and couple, you know, events and things like that. And so it is very personal. It's just not something you're making with your own two hands. And that. And then I also found that I was drawing pictures, pulling pictures from Facebook and Instagram and all of that, not just from my photo files. And so that's kind of cool with the photo sharing, that I can use, you know, my son's photos and different things like that too, which is nice. So it's impersonal, but it's personal, I guess. It's not writing out the Christmas cards like we used to do with the message inside.
I remember my mom complaining when she got her first printed, her, you know, you usually write like books.
Right.
My mom writing like full cards, just like the whole history of the year and what we've done, you know.
Right.
Like Mike got his first tooth and all this stuff. And then I remember the first time someone sent her one of those with a printout
from a computer.
From Word. Yeah, with like some pictures inside of a card with nothing written on the card. It's like, this is terrible. This is, this is so rude. This is so impersonal. This
I mean, you know, just stop and think how much the world's changed because, you know, Facebook, we know immediately, you know, if we're following our children or whatever, we know that live stream that they're out there constantly producing. But back in the day, well, here's, you know, a 3-page letter of everything that we've done, and, you know, since we haven't seen you in the last 6 months.
Yes, over the whole year, the newsletters.
She was just so offended because she's like, well, I know they just printed out multiple copies of this. And
it's not, not personal. Well,
aren't you saying the same thing?
I was offended when we had given a wedding gift in that, and they had printed little photo cards that just said thank you for the gift and used labels for the addresses and that. And it was like, okay, if I'm going to spend that much money on a gift, you could at least write our names on it or something, pretend like
thanks for the gift. I gave you cash, man.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, you know, and after I thought that, I'm like, oh man, I'm getting old.
Those conventions are changing. The culture is changing. Yep. So as you know, as advancements occur, the culture adapts. So
sometimes begrudgingly.
Yes. Okay, Mike, what ideas do you have?
I have two. One is, and it was more for, one is kind of like for everyone, and then the other one is more for teachers, per se, of all different grade levels. But the first one's called Glyph, and Glyph is it looks like a wrench, but it's actually a stand or tripod holder for your smartphone. As I don't know if you saw the new Windows one, has the really, really good camera that you can zoom in really far from far away.
Yeah, that was cool.
You know, the new Apple, you know, the new iPhones, pretty good. This is nice because you can adjust it to where it will hold any of your smartphones or any phone with a camera, and then you can attach that to a tripod, so you can take the nice still photos with your smartphone. And it's really small. It's about the size of a bottle opener, and it also, you can set it to where it turns itself into a stand, so you can just like hold your phone on it on the table if you're doing, you know, something you want to monitor something, or you know, maybe you're doing a Skype or something over your phone and you don't want to sit here and be jiggling your phone the whole time.
Or even just using it as a timer or have a recipe or something, you know, directions or something like that, that you need to use your hands for something else.
Right. So it's pretty good. It's small. It's pretty good stocking stuffer. It's about $20. And like I said, it's customizable to any phone. You just use the Allen wrench that they provide with you to actually adjust the size of the clasping unit, which is pretty neat. So rubberized plastic, and so it's, you know, it seems like it's pretty good quality. So it was pretty interesting. I found it first on Uncrate.com, which has just a plethora of different high-end gifts for. It's more universal for everyone. And then the other gift I wanted to bring up that is pretty good for teachers. I know when I was taking classes, especially master's classes, and we converted from writing on the chalkboard to giving PowerPoint presentations, a lot of my professors and teachers wouldn't leave the podium. And they would just stand back there, and they wouldn't get around because, you know, they're kind of tied to that computer, you know, and that's their safety net. They need the mouse to click to the next slide. Well, clickers have really come down in price in the years, just like with technology. And, you know, right now you can get really decent clickers for like 20 or 30 bucks, which are small, great stocking stuffer. And it's nice because it gets you away from your computer. Yeah. And they're kind of, they're nice too, where they have a lot more advanced features that stuff you can do on the computer, but you have to, like, if you're in PowerPoint and you want to mute the screen, you have to like exit out and then turn it off or mute the screen, where these have like, you know, pre-programmed buttons that just black out the screen. So like, yeah, if you're in a deep conversation or a debate with someone in your class, you just black out the screen so people aren't distracted. And if you want to walk in front, you're not blinding yourself. And they have laser pointers, and most of them are, they load up themselves. You know, you just plug in the little dongle and it auto loads and everything. And now some of the dongles actually have memory, so you can load your presentation to it to the dongle. And then you just, all you have to carry around is this clicker, and you know the dongle's internal to it because they're small and tiny, just like your mice.
You usually plug in the little USB transmitter receiver unit, and then
that's what a dongle is.
Yep. Yeah, they used to.
I learned something new today. I've never heard that term before.
Oh, we're dating ourselves.
It's the US. It's the USB. It's what plugs into your
USB. Yeah, it's the little receiver. Like if you have like a wireless mouse, they have like the little micro dongles.
Dongle.
Back in the day, that's how some software manufacturers protected their licensing. You had to plug something into the computer for it to go out to get the code so you couldn't pirate the software.
Yep. The code would change. Yeah. At like a regular interval. And Bluetooth really talked about dongles, because you had to have a Bluetooth dongle in your computer.
Just a chip, you know, and
inside,
everything.
Right.
So, yeah, don't talk about that term so much anymore. But yeah, that's a great little one. Another great little, you know, affordable stocking stuffer is just like an 8 GB flash drive.
Yeah.
You know, if you have students, you know, here at college and things, they're storing their papers and things. So that's just a nice little one. And then another one, again, depending upon, you know, this is kind of going back to the hands-on type things, and you know, with your children, or if you want to learn a little bit more about computers, there are some very, very affordable, essentially computer circuit boards, but one that's gaining a lot of traction in the education community. In fact, just kind of mentioned this week, there's something going around called the Hour of Code. I don't know if anybody's following that, but it's kind of a nationwide challenge where they're wanting, you know, children to go out there and do some coding, you know, to get their feet wet in the programming. But this one is called the Raspberry Pi. And like I said, it's just a little circuit board. I'll provide a link in the show notes. But it's very affordable, you know, usually around $40 or so. And essentially what it is, it can be an entire computer. And then you have the components. It doesn't come, you know, it doesn't come with a monitor. So it doesn't come with a keyboard. But, you plug your peripherals into it. And then the link that I'll provide has something called Getting Started with Raspberry Pi. And most of them use the Linux operating system because it's free and open source.
Yeah.
So you can go out there and you kind of essentially build your own computer from scratch. And they have cases and everything with it. But it's a very, very affordable, you know, kind of computer science activity. Again, you know, high school students, and I suspect middle school students would find it, you know, useful too.
And they're small. They're about the size of a, you know, smartphone.
They'll fit in the palm of your hand.
Yeah.
They're small.
They're small. Oh, nice. They're not like a big tower or anything like that.
So that's it for some of the holidays. Of course, we can go on and the price continues to go up, but you know, a lot of new technologies, all kinds of new tablets and things going on out there. Chromebooks are up and coming in our education space. So over the break, just want to mention, this will be our last show here in December, and we'll come back in January. But make sure you unplug over the holidays, and I have trouble myself doing that. But I'll try to get away from all the electronics for a while just to get a little bit of a break from that.
Very good.
That wraps it up for episode 160 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Happy holidays.